Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen as I sing all about the king. You can hear him all the time on the Eagles sidelines. He looks nice in his fur coat. Nitwit, moron, and dope are his favorite quotes. He cheers the wins and he boos the losses. He interviews athletes and mob bosses. He's an all-time Philly. A graduate of Northeast High. You can't get enough of Howard Eskin on WIP. That's why he's got this podcast. So listen up, because he's ready to speak.
Here we are for another edition of the Howard Eskin podcast, available, as you probably know, because you're here, available on iTunes. You know, there's so many good people in football that have now watched the Eagles and understand they're a really good team. One of those people would be one of the most recent Hall of Famers, and that would be Terrell Davis, TD. And he has, I know he has a lot of good things to say about the Eagles. So we'll comment on it. We'll talk about what he's had to say. I'm sure he'll have an interesting perspective. Let's go to Terrell Davis. Joining us now is a recent Hall of Famer, running back Terrell Davis. Hall of Fame. How does that sound in front of your name? Hall of Fame.
Sounds good. Sounds better when you say it, Howard. I like it. Hall of Fame. It's good.
Yeah. How has it changed your life, if at all?
You know, not a whole lot, you know, because, you know, your life is pretty much set. You know, I've been away from football or haven't played in like 16 years. So, you know, you kind of get things set. I still got my family. I still got to change diapers. You know, I still got to run errands. So from that standpoint, not a whole lot. But what it did do was it kind of put you in the forefront of the football universe for a period of time that hasn't been there for a long time. You know, and so that felt good. And it was almost like I was being eulogized, you know, the whole Hall of Fame experience where people are talking about you in the past tense, but you're living. Like you're walking, you're seeing this, and people say, yeah, he was a good player. He was a good guy. He was this, he was that. And I'm like, I'm still here. Like, I didn't go anywhere, man. But so it's weird from that standpoint. Not a whole lot has changed. But, man, it does feel... It's what's weird, though, Howard, is to be in the same room with some of the icons of all time. You know, you're looking at Jim Brown, wow. Jim Taylor, you know, Deacon Jones. And you see all these guys, you're like, wow, this is just an amazing experience. I know Deacon's not with us, but I mean, just to his name, just the stuff that we're kind of, you know, it's amazing. Like, you're like right in the middle of history.
You're around people. Well, that's what I was just going to say. You're around people. You're with the history of the NFL. And not that you weren't part of the history as a running back, but now you're, as a Hall of Famer, do you feel like you're really a part of the history?
It still doesn't feel that way.
Wow.
I mean, even though, you know, because who, and like I talked to a lot of Hall of Famers, and I asked them, I said, I mean, do you feel like you belong here? And even the greatest players will tell you, man, it just, they never saw themselves like you see other people. And that's one of maybe it's humility. I don't know what it is, but it's like, I grew up and you see these names and now all of a sudden I'm in the same room with these guys, or I'm in the same sentence or paragraph or, you know, whatever it is. And now we're in that room with the Buster in and you walk around, and you finally see me in there. And it's just, it's weird. It's kind of surreal, man, but it's all wonderful. At the end of the day, man, the experience is that it is like no other. I love it. I'm thankful and grateful that I was able to be a part of it. And And hopefully I can carry that name well, man, and just represent the Hall of Fame.
I want to talk to you about the Eagles, but one more question. Jim Brown or Gale Sayers, arguably the greatest running backs in the history of the game. You may have an opinion and somebody else, but those are the guys that I kind of remember. What was it like to be around Jim Brown, who may be the greatest running back of all time?
Yeah, that was cool. And Jim is a wealth of knowledge, man. And I remember we're sitting in the room and Jerome Bettis comes up. And I had seen Jim before. I met him before, but I never really had a chance to talk to him. He said, man, if you do one thing, he said, before you get out of here, you've got to sit down and talk to Jim Brown. That is the one thing you must do before you leave Canton. And I had a chance to sit with Jim and talk to him, man. And it is incredible to talk to Jim and be around him. And then after that day, we had spoken, we exchanged numbers and stuff. And so then I've seen him like four or five times after that at some of the same events that we've been doing with the Hall of Famers, man. And he's like my boy now, man.
Well, that's amazing when you think about that, you know. And you watched him, obviously. I would think at your age, you watched him growing up, right? So it's a
no,
guy.
He was before me, Howard. Like I never seen Jim Brown play.
Oh, you know, really?
No.
You know, well, there wasn't much TV, and I can't say, you know, I was a little kid, and I remember a little bit of Jim Brown, but it gets accentuated when you realize what he did in such a short period of time, because he had had enough. I probably remember more from the Dirty Dozen, the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I remember from I'm going to get you, sucker. I'm going to get you, sucker. You know, we got a toe shot off. But Jim Brown is a huge man. He is huge still at his age. I think he's 80 now. Mm-hmm. But the man he's huge. And you can kind of see, imagine him playing back in the 60s when he played, man. And how, I mean, he was unique for a running back. He was like a defensive lineman, man, how big he was. And strong, powerful man. But for me, if you say best back that I've ever seen, it's probably Barry. Barry's the best back that I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, I guess in your lifetime. Yeah. You know, and, you know, it's really hard because eras change. The game changes. Eras change. The schemes, mm-hmm. the way that the people play defense. So it all changes. But if you're a good back, you're a good back. But nonetheless, you are a Hall of Famer. So accept
right
that.
On, man.
Wear that badge on your chest, and you can wear that gold jacket around, too.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I'll bet you, too. All right, so the Eagles played your guys, your former team. I mean, they are a shadow of a team that won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. They're in quarterback hell. But before we get to them, what did you see from this Eagles team? The fact that they're so good, and as we speak, they're probably the best team in the NFL.
Yeah, they're good on both sides of the ball. They're good, I think, particularly up front on both sides. You've got a great system. I think Doug Peterson in his second year, you know, working with Carson Wentz, man, I think it's just a perfect match. And you watch the variety of plays and how they set them up and what they do with – you know, whether it's, you know, options and PR, those OPRs, and, you know, it's amazing how they're able to do what they're doing. And it's no glaring weaknesses. And we talked about this before, is that maybe their back end is one you might say, okay, you know, maybe that's an area that you can exploit, but you don't get time. I think you look at their front and how they just pressure you constantly. And a lot of times, whether it's four-man, whether it's, you know, five or six men, they're constantly making the quarterback uncomfortable. And what I saw last Sunday was Brock had no time to throw. I mean, there was no time to throw. They beat you up at the line. It's always attacking the quarterback. You're basically defending the run on your way to the quarterback. And they're so good at that. And now you have a team that believes they're good. Last year, they started off pretty fast and then slowed down a little bit. That's not going to happen this year because I think the confidence level that they have now is through the roof.
And Carson Wentz, it's a year and a half. He's been in the league as a star. He's been in the league and as a starter the entire time. A year and a half. What do you see? I see him improve every week, but I don't know if you see him every week. But what do you see as a guy looking at the Eagles from the outside?
The one thing I noticed, I was talking about this during the offseason. I had to watch some film on him. And the one thing I noticed was that his eyes were a bit active, and his head, his first year, meaning he was coming out, he looked right, looked left, and he's all over the place. This year, I think that's settled down to where he's reading, but it's a little bit more precise. Okay, one, two, I got three. And that is really just the mental and the computer and the brain processing what he's saying. And we've always talked about how the game is always so fast for young quarterbacks. And there's so many things out there that you know, your eyes might be catching. I think he's quieted his eyes down and his head a lot, and he's able to be a little bit more precise in what he's doing. And this, the off season of going through and having that on film and coming back, I certainly see that he's confident. I think Doug Peterson and how they're working, and Frank Wright, how they're working with him, and they're putting him in the best situations possible, getting him more control of the line with play calls and what he's saying. It's pretty good to see.
Yeah, it's a really interesting observation. But when you think about it, that's what he does. He can process things obviously quicker. But he has some receivers that where he may not be afraid to throw, but he just processes it and he makes those reads. It's interesting how he's transformed in such a short period of time. And really, a year and a half is not a long period of time.
No, it's really not. Not in the grand scheme of things. So he's really, just kind of coming out of your, and it's, it's like you're still a rookie in some respects, right?
Yep.
I know. Technically, you're not, but quarterbacks, man, I think that like year three is when you kind of see who they really are. And if you're making progress and you're getting better as a quarterback leading to that third year, man, that's a great sign for any team, man. But I like his skills. He's a big man, too, by the way. I don't think people realize how big he is.
Oh, he is big. Yeah. He really – you don't until I see him every day at practice. And then you stand when he's on the field before the game. He is a big guy, and he's strong. He just does. He's smart. He's athletic. Now he's making better decisions. But a question, and I don't know, you played with, and don't take this as a comparison because people love to make comparisons. It's too early in his career to make a comparison. You played with the guy that I think is no worse than third or fourth ever in the NFL. Now, I may be over, but I love John Elway playing the game. TD, does the quarterback make the running back better at times? You know, I know we think about it the other way. Well, the running back and you could make it better because then people couldn't come at you as hard. But when you have a good quarterback, how much does it help the running back, if anything?
A lot. A lot. You know, Howard, I was blessed to have played, with John, and you can tell some of the games we go into, it was about, whether it was stopping me or John, and we had the best of both worlds. So if you try to stop the running game, you try to adding seven in the box, throw the eighth man down in the box, and you want to try to, play man outside, and man, that we were going to kill you because John was, and even games where they said, okay, we're going to stop the pass. And if we chose to throw the ball, you weren't going to dictate what we did, basically. Mm-hmm. And John was able to do that. So, yeah, we had all that stuff. You can have the play action. You can have whether you go five wides, you can go, four. You can go, jumbo package. You can go – we can do it all. And it just made my life a lot easier. And then vice versa. I was able to help him, and our line was able to help the passing game out too. And that's really what you want from any team. And what's hard is people try to say, all right, we try to dissect and take this piece out and say, well, would they be good without that? You know what? We don't need to worry about that because we have that piece. And that's what makes us unique. That's why we are so good because we do have both pieces. And when you have that, man, you can play any game, any weather, anywhere, anytime.
You know what? I don't remember you having to share the ball with anybody, especially with the career you had and the way it went. But now people made a big deal. They made a big deal before Jay Ajayi even was traded here. Was it going to be Blunt or is it? And then Sproles was still here, but now Corey Clement's done a good job. Are you surprised that these guys have coexisted and understand what it's about, especially with a guy like LeGarrette Blunt who had so many carries last year?
Yeah, I think what it is that. that's kind of the new normal, right? I mean, you rarely see backfields now that are, you know, really just one back doing everything. You normally see backfields now that are, you know, LeGarrette Blount came from New England where they had 20 backs. So, you know, he knew how to operate in that system. Ajayi might be a little bit used to kind of getting, you know, his volume carries. Mm-hmm. But I do notice when you go to a team and they're winning and they've been winning without you and you go there, you kind of accept the culture there and you kind of buy in and say, hey, however I can contribute to this team's success, I'm willing to do that. And I hope that sticks with him because, you know, some of the talk down in Miami was that he was a me guy. Mm-hmm. And that him and Adam Gase got into it and all that stuff. And, you know, he wants his carries, he wants to be the man. You hope that, you know, he kind of left that in Miami, and now that he's in Philly, that he kind of just buys into whatever they're doing. The problem with sometimes having a guy who is a 5 to 10 carry guy a game, it's hard to get into a groove for some backs. You know, for me, I needed high teens to 20 to really feel like that I was wearing down a defense and getting into a groove. But again, I think backs are now understanding that this is kind of the way it is now. You're not going to get 20 carries a game. You're going to get, you know, 5 to 10 touches, and that's kind of what you have to make good with.
You know, I think the culture of the locker room, and sometimes that's overstated, but I'll tell you this, and I've said this on the air too. I've looked around, and not because I wanted to find a bad guy. I can't find a bad guy. Every once in a while I look around, no, he's good. And how important, I'm telling you, I can't find one.
Well, you know what they say? I heard, I feel it. It's that, like the chemistry there is like, it's perfect. Now, when you hear that from what I'm hearing as an outsider, I've never been in their locker room, but to hear that the chemistry in that locker room is perfect, that is what you want. And it's hard to build that. It's really hard. And sometimes when you bring somebody in, it could be one person, and that one person can come in there. We've heard, like, you know, he's a cancer. He's the one, you know, he disrupts the – and that's, you know, big talk about T.O. when he was playing. He was kind of that person that would go into a locker room, and you might have a good team. You think we're adding a good player, but you cannot understate the character when you bring that person in there and how sometimes that disrupts people and teams from the ultimate goal. And it's real. It's not fake. It is real.
And you need it. The teams that win, and there might be some exceptions, they have that chemistry, don't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. And also, chemistry is not just good. It's not. People think it's just like, oh, it's just all good guys. Sometimes there's a guy in there that, you know, he may be a little questionable, but he's necessary to the glue.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he kind of balances out all the choir boys. But if you have too much for that person, it can destroy the chemistry. But you just have just enough, you know, bad boys in there with sort of the good guys, man. That's kind of how a real good team chemistry sort of forms.
You know what? I've always heard the term, and you hear it as a player when somebody gets hurt: next man up, next man up. And you think, well, that's a lot of BS. But because the next man up can't be as good, or otherwise he wouldn't be second string as the player that got hurt. Now, the Eagles have suffered a lot of injuries, whether it's Darren Sproles, now Jason Peters, Jordan Hicks, Chris Maragos, who people outside of Philadelphia would say, well, who's Chris Maragos? He was the leader on special teams. He just blew people up, and he is out for the season. But the next man up on the Eagles, how important is it for guys to understand either this is your opportunity – or and you're filling in for a guy that was really – Jason Peters is a classic example that's really good.
Yeah, it's important. But you said it, Howard. You may never get the guy behind the starter who is going to be as good. But in a lot of cases, we don't need you to be as good as the starter. We need you to be the best player you can be. And sometimes you have enough people around – who can make up for that deficiency. But you got to be prepared, though. And in most cases, the quarterback position is the one that when that guy is not right, that's the one that really is the glaring one, is when you have a QB that's like that. You know, the other guys come in there. Sometimes if it's an offensive tackle, sometimes he's glaring because he's being beat. Sometimes you can hide guards or centers. Running backs come in there. Sometimes that guy may not be explosive as a starter. But no, we all have the understanding that when that starter goes down, you got to be prepared to play, and you got to be prepared to come in there. And there can't be a visible drop off at that position. That's really what you're taught as a backup. Come in there, and there can't be a visible drop off performance wise. You know, you may not be as good as that guy, but we can't have you be a liability when that person leaves the field.
You know, I don't know if you have spoken to Doug Peterson or how many times he got tortured. And, you know, it's Philadelphia. It's not Denver, where that's all they do in this town is they always try. They're 8-1, and people are still trying to – there's media people and people, not a lot now. But how much do you respect Doug Peterson for staying the course and making this team better? And the team does believe in him, and the quarterback's play. How much do you put into Doug Peterson for that?
A lot. You know, we want to give players credit for winning games. We rarely want to give coaches or, you know, the GMs credit. But I think Doug has done a good job, man. You know, he's coming as a young coach, relatively speaking, in terms of head coaching position. And, no, he's kept this – you know, last year when they kind of – you know, struggle down the stretch, man. That was a lot, catching a lot of heat. And, you know, Philly's tough.
Really? It really is.
You guys are tough. By the way, I was there last week, the Denver game in the parking lot, man. And I was actually surprised at a lot of the love I received in Philly, man. It was pretty cool, man.
Well, if they were losing, they'd be all over you. And it wouldn't even be your fault, but they'd get on you. You wouldn't have been able to stay out there very long.
I know. I think I came at the right time, too.
You really did. Now, I'm going to mention something which you probably haven't heard from the outside. But Mike Lombardi, who you may or may not know who he is, he was former, obviously, executive in the NFL. The beginning of the season, he just, for whatever reason, he doesn't like Doug Peterson. Didn't like Andy Reid, but you can't rip Andy Reid, and Doug was one of his disciples. He said he was, now listen to this, the least qualified to be a head coach in the NFL in his 30 years in the NFL. I mean, it is absolutely asinine to think how you can determine that. How qualified does he look right now to you?
He looks pretty damn qualified to me.
Yeah, he sure does. I don't know what Mike was thinking about. I mean, you have guys, I mean, I remember who was at Campo, the head coach of the Cowboys. Rich Kotite coached the Eagles one time. What a dope he was. There's a lot of bad coaches out there. All right, a few more questions. Now, you touched on it earlier, and I was asked this question today on the air. Tell me what the weakness is of the Eagles. Now, I watch them every week, and I had a hard time. I mean, you really have to be really picky. In watching them, the times you watch them, and obviously you watched them last week, do you see a weakness in the Eagles? Any weakness?
I don't see a weakness. I don't see a weakness. Like I said, if you were nitpicking, but I think is Darby back? Is he healthy?
I think he's going to be back the next game when they play the Cowboys on Sunday night.
Okay, but he's missed. I think most of the games. I think he's only played in one game.
Got hurt in the first game.
So you know, I think there was this talk about okay, the Eagles secondary is not the greatest, and obviously they're giving up, you know, the passing yards. I think they're in the 20s or something like that defensively. But I think we use the word weakness, and I think it's not applied correctly. I think what you're saying is that, you know, if there's any area that they may need a little improvement on, you can maybe say that. But it's not a weakness. You know, it's not like they're ranked 32nd in the NFL, and teams are just throwing for, you know, 300 plus yards a game on them. No, so I don't see it. And the game I saw last week, if you say there's a weakness on this team, man, please identify it to me, because I certainly didn't see it. I saw this team strong on both sides of the ball.
The one thing that happens when a team gets up big, and the Eagles have done that, they lead the league with I don't know how many straight games it is now, 20-plus points, and no other team has had as many as the Eagles have had in consecutive games. But when you get a big, it's like last week, that was junk yards. That was garbage. And a lot of teams, when you have a big deficit, you throw the ball, so you're going to throw for more yards. I don't know if that's not part of it now, too. So sometimes those stats can be misleading. And the Eagles just, they do a good job with that, and they hit people. Boy, they do hit people.
Oh, yes, they do, man.
Yeah, it's all right. So now here's the question, and it's not a question that you can really answer. It's an opinion at this time of the year. The best team in the NFL, if you gave me the top three, who would those teams be?
The top three in the NFL right now.
Yep.
I think just by – you got to put the Patriots in there just because they're in there. They're always going to be there.
They're probably cheating anyway. They always cheat.
Yeah, that's okay, man. They're cheating. I'll put the Eagles there. I only get three, my top three.
Okay, go five if you want to start bringing everybody else in. But if you put Denver in, I'm going to call you out. Just because
you played there. Denver just missed the top five. They might be sixth in it. No, give me the Patriots. I'll give me the Eagles first. Record and everything I've seen, I think they're the best team in the National Football League. I'll put the Steelers second.
Okay.
The Steelers second. I'll put the, and this might shock you, I'm putting my Saints third right now.
Wow, is their defense good enough? But we'll see. Right.
Well, you know what? Their defense is opportunistic, man. They can take the ball away. I'll put the Rams four.
Well, that's right. You can't forget about the Rams now, even though they are a surprise too.
Yeah, but the Rams four. Then I'll put the Patriots at five. That's my top right there.
Oh, okay. Well, Bill Belichick won't have an answer for you because he doesn't answer anybody anyway. So I don't know if you talk to him. Hey, man, it's really, really a pleasure to talk to you. I'm sure I'll see you at the Super Bowl. Not the greatest place. Here's why I think the Eagles have a good chance to go to the Super Bowl. You're going to love this. This is just a backward analogy. The last time they went to the Super Bowl was in Jacksonville. That, to me, was the worst Super Bowl city in the history of the NFL. The worst. Minnesota might be a nice city, but not in February.
So you're basing this off of the city and the weather.
Yes. Well, Jacksonville was just remember, I don't know if you went to Jacksonville. They didn't even have enough hotel rooms. They had to put...
I did all the ships. I was there. Yeah.
And they had to move the cruise ships because they had too many where they were because they hit the bottom of the water. It was 3 miles. It was a joke. It was a joke. So now they went there, which wasn't a great city. Minnesota, it's not like you have a lot of things to do in Minnesota. You're walking around in tunnels in February. I think the last time I was in Minnesota, it was 0 degrees. So it's just that's why I think they have a good chance. Because then following, you have Atlanta. Then you have Miami and Tampa and probably L.A. So they'll get Minnesota. Minnesota just because it's not one of those premier cities.
And I think like with Minnesota, I think like the Super Bowl committee, when they look at these games, they look at the game and say, okay, the game has to be protected. So it has to be inside of a stadium. I know New York's wasn't, but I think Minnesota's getting it because new stadium. And you got the top on it. Well, what about the other activities that you're gonna go to, right? I mean, because really, it's about the fanfare and everything that goes outside of the game.
Correct.
That's the problem. Because when they had remember the Super Bowl was in Detroit.
Oh yes, and that snowstorm where one of the teams was almost late for the game.
I didn't do anything in Detroit that week, man. I was in the hotel. I went to eat at my event and came right back. There was no going outside other than that, man. So
I think it was 82. I mean, it was crazy. It was somewhere in the 80s. It was a joke. That was a joke. But, yeah, if you have a snowstorm, I guess the stadium's close to where all the hotels are, and they'll get you there. But I remember Atlanta was actually a bad city when they had it there because they had a half an inch of snow, and it shut down the city. Happened one time in Dallas, too.
That was the ice. That ice was bad.
Right.
Was bad.
So anyway, that's why I think they're probably going to go because it's Minnesota. So backwards
way. Not that they're a good team.
Well, actually, they are a very good team. Right. I mean, they'd have to be a good – no, I think they're a very good team. And right now, I think they're the best in the NFL. And I think they really, really have a good chance to go there. It's just, it's unbelievable. They have a tough stretch coming up. Four of the next five games are on the road. They have three straight in Seattle at the Rams and then come back and play the Giants. But that third straight road game, the Giants may have really, they've already packed it in. Maybe they won't even show up for the game. It's so bad for them. So, all right. Hey, man, stay in touch. It's fun to talk to you. I'm sure we'll talk again. If you need anything, just give me a call.
I certainly will, Howard. Thank you, man. Appreciate it, brother.
No, it's my pleasure. Terrell Owens, thank you. Terrell Owens. Thanks, Terrell. Terrell. I screw up your name because of Terrell Owens. It's Terrell Davis. Terrell Davis. Let me say it three times quickly. Terrell Davis. You're a Hall of Famer. That's all I know.
That's it. Hall of Famer.
There you go. Brother. Thanks, man.
See you, man.
I mean, he made some really, really, really good observations. The locker room is really important. And as a former player in a locker room where he won Super Bowls, now he won with a great quarterback, but that locker room had to be together. And you do need leadership, and you need players together, and you need chemistry. And TD talked about that, and it really is important. But one of the other things I found interesting is his discussion about Carson Wentz and his eyes down the field, how he sees that he's changed with his eyes down the field, and it is amazing that. The difference in Carson Wentz in a year. Now, his former team is in quarterback hell. And once you don't have – well, not once. When you don't have a quarterback and Denver doesn't have a quarterback, you are really, really in trouble. And Denver is probably in trouble for years. Remember, when they won the Super Bowl, they were minus in turnovers. Usually, they were minus four to Carolina's, I think, plus 12 when they went into the Super Bowl. And Peyton Manning threw a lot of interceptions that year. That's why they didn't let him throw the ball. But that was the end of what was – Peyton Manning had something left. But you can't win without a quarterback. And as TD said, Terrell Davis, you really have what it takes if you have the quarterback and the Eagles have the quarterback. All right, some other things I want to talk about. I think TD kind of talked about a lot of things which give people, I think, an appreciation of this team. And he ranked them number one. How about that? Eagles 1, Steelers 2, Saints 3, Rams 4, and the Patriots 5. That's how he ranks the Eagles in the NFL right now with the other teams. But we'll talk about some of the other things going on. All right. The 76ers. Now, I don't know when you'll listen to this podcast, but when the Sixers started their West Coast trip, Joel Embiid didn't play in the first game of the trip after having 3 days off. Sixers called it load management. I don't believe that's the case. I believe there was something wrong with him. Not serious, not a serious thing, but was there. And this would lead you to questions because it's so ridiculous to have, well, it's about load management. Load management, he hasn't played in 3 days. What the hell are you talking about? So I think that there could be some swelling in his knee. Remember, he had a knee problem before, the meniscus. I think he's another thing. He's probably out of shape. And if he's out of shape, he shouldn't be out of shape. But that's really less serious, clearly less serious than having some kind of flare-up to an injury. And that would be a problem. If you're already starting load management, really what is early in the season, then it's ridiculous. Now, the Sixers are a good basketball team. I don't know how good. I predicted 53 wins at the beginning of the season and Eastern Conference Finals. They're on their way. You know, they still have to win some more games. But they need Joel Embiid to play. You can't expect that Ben Simmons and Covington and J.J. Redick has really been a good addition to this team because he's a veteran that adds leadership, and you really needed to help and teach this team how to win. It sounds crazy, but they had a culture of losing, and they had a culture of losing for so long that young guys just expect when you either blow a lead or you're behind in the fourth quarter and you can't catch up, whatever it may be, it's a culture of losing. But J.J. Redick changes that. That was really a really, really a good signing by the 76ers. And it helps, not just because he can shoot the three. They have some players. Nobody can shoot the three as well as he can. But he adds a veteran leadership, which will help the team. I don't know if he'll be here in a year, but he'll teach them how to win. But you do need Joel Embiid. So my point about the Sixers, just tell us the truth. And you know, there's so many times where you haven't told us the truth. If his knee is swollen, you know, if he's got swelling in the knee, just tell us. Stop worrying about selling tickets and trusting the profits, not the process. Trusting the profits, that's what the Sixers do. So I have really a major problem with what I believe, and I think other people believe, that they're not completely honest. And that's the problem, that they're not completely honest with the fans and with whomever on what may be a problem with Joel Embiid. You're going to need him if you're going to go anywhere. And I don't know how many games you can have him take off for load management. The most ridiculous. Sports science is a joke, and they're goofy. And you can't blame the real doctors. And I don't call Dr. David Martin a real doctor. He's a doctor of zoology. And the other guy they got from Barcelona is a real doctor, but he's into all this crazy stuff too. So somewhere along the way, tell us the truth. That's all. Just tell us the truth. But they're on their way to 53 wins. All right, another thing. And I haven't talked about this on a podcast yet. I've talked about it on the air in WIP. Gabe Kapler, the new Phillies manager. You know, you can discard the few goofy things that he said on his blogs, the use of coconut oil. And I know during the news conference, I kind of asked, not about the coconut oil. People misconstrued. It's just when you're starting to think like that, there's some issues there. He wanted a chicken coop in spring training for the Dodgers. It's like because he didn't like organic eggs. He wanted farm-grown eggs for the players. And if he had a lot of chickens, he could have his own eggs. It's like ridiculous stuff. Believes that human body parts are nutritious. Believes that you should sun below your waist. Yes, your testicles. You should sun your testicles to get more vitamin D. I mean, some of the things, and you've got to take ownership and wonder if this guy has had that in his head before, then how long has he had it in his head? And one major thing, which is not laughable to some of us like those things, there still is a question on what he did to Nick Francona, the son of Terry Francona, who's a military veteran who was ahead of a sniper group in Afghanistan. And there was an issue on Nick Francona wanting to test himself for, you know, that situation that sometimes military guys have, and his mother works in a hospital in Boston that treats military people. And as soon as Gabe Kapler found out about it, according to some things you hear, they didn't want to offer him a contract, which they did before, and he shared that information with him. This is the information that I've been told. He shared that information with him, and then he eventually fired him. That's a question that'll linger out there. And like, why did that happen? Why did that happen? Now baseball cleared the Dodgers and Gabe Kapler of any wrongdoing, and the Phillies, Major League Baseball said the Phillies checked on it. I still have some questions and some issues about that, and you kind of wonder about the guy. He's a little strange, and that's not strange. That's not good if, in fact, that happened. Hey, the Dodgers tried to make a settlement from the reports out there, so we'll see. The Phillies will be better, but I don't know if it's going to be because of the manager. But we'll see. We'll see what happens, and we'll see how it all works out. Matt Klentak made a comment. Well, one of the things I liked about him is he played hard. You know how many players play hard, play really hard? That doesn't make them good managers. That doesn't mean the players are going to respect them. And I think that's an important thing. And the last thing, and sadness, and I don't want to dwell on it anymore because we've talked about it, and it's sad, and Roy Halladay is no longer among us. He gave a lot to Phillies fans, and there's been a lot of memories, and we've heard him on the air, and we've heard people talk about him. A lot of memories from Roy Halladay, and it's sad when something like that happens, and it's why did that happen? Why did that happen? Why did we have to lose Roy Halladay? But in that flying accident, it's really difficult. So the way I'm going to finish this off is rest in peace, Doc. That's rest in peace, Roy Halladay. If you want to listen to any of the podcasts, they're available. The Howard Eskin Podcast on iTunes. Have a great week.
Listen as I sing all about the king. You can hear him all the time on the Eagles sidelines. He looks nice in his fur coat. Nitwit, moron, and dope are his favorite quotes. He cheers the wins and he boos the losses. He interviews athletes and mob bosses. He's an all-time Philly guy, a graduate. get enough of Howard Eskin on WIP. That's why he's got this podcast. So listen up, because he's ready to speak.
Okay, guys, we got to put our trays up for takeoff.
Where's Dad?
Oh, he's in the back. We could only get three seats together.
Daddy has my pillow.
We'll get it later. Can you not put your feet up, please?
Why aren't we going?
We must be in line for takeoff.
Like security?
Well, that was a different line.
I have to go.
We just sat down.
But I have to go.
The seatbelt sign's on.
Why aren't we moving?
Hey, no kicking.
We're just 15th in line for takeoff.
Son of a...
Don't go there. Go on a real vacation. Go RVing. Learn more at GoRVing.com.